Today is June 2nd, 2010, and you are listening to FatCast Episode 7. I am Leslie Kinzel of FatShinista.com, and as always, joining me is Marianne Kirby of TheRotund.com. In this podcast, Marianne and I discuss how living in a culture that makes assumptions about us based on our bodies can lead us to question reality. Hello, and this is episode 7 of FatCast, and in this episode, Marianne and I want to talk about questioning reality. And this is sort of a continuous theme very often. Actually, it's a continuous theme in a lot of social justice activism in general. It's particularly continuous, at least I notice it a lot, in fat-related activism. Because you're confronting so many ideas and issues that people really, really take for granted and are totally convinced they already have a complete and thorough understanding of all of the issues involved. So when you're telling someone, you know, well, I actually don't eat like, you know, 3 whole chickens and a vat of mashed potatoes and chase it down with like a bucket of frosting every day. They don't believe you. They very often don't believe you. And I've run into this a lot where, you know, people will just outright call me a liar when I talk about, you know, my eating habits or my exercise habits. Now, for the beginning part, we're going to just, you know, sort of give the typical disclaimer that is, you know, none of this stuff is anyone's business unless you choose to share this information. So, you know, no one has any right to know more about what you eat or how you exercise unless you, you know, want to tell them that. You don't have to justify your existence, as we're fond of saying. But yeah, this is just, I mean, this is such a common, and I know, Marianne, you have written about this recently, too, that this is such a common thing for when you're you know, trying to go out there and trying to just be yourself and be honest about your experience, and you run up against people who are outright like, well, you're full of shit and you're making it up and you're lying.
Yes.
And the extension... The extension of that is that, you know, even part of what made me think about this topic today was I had a very overt troll comment that sort of, it was sort of concern trolly that talked about, and when I, you know, basically talked about that, oh, well, you seem smart and like a reasonably intelligent person if you could just eat less. And it kept saying over and over, if you just, you eat too much, you should eat less. You eat too much, you should eat less. And I think I said to you, Marianne, earlier today, or texted to you, or IM to you, I don't remember, earlier today, where I'm like, it, in my head, I started reading it. It was like, you eat too much, echo, echo, echo.
Exactly what you IM'd me through the magic of our smartphones.
Because it was just like, it becomes one of those things where, you know, I fancy myself pretty well informed. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm very much in a situation of being pretty far. I mean, I'm not like at the end of the road, because I don't think anyone is, but I'm pretty far along the road of self-acceptance and contentment. And there are days when my defenses are down, or if I'm just in a shitty mood, and I read a comment like that, and I'm like, ugh! Because I'm on the one hand, my brain is going, but I don't, like, I eat exactly the right amount.
Hey, Leslie. Leslie.
Yeah.
Leslie, if you just ate less, those comments wouldn't bother you. I'm sorry. I know I'm a bad person. I realize. I just, it's so frustrating, because I didn't even get that damn comment. And I was reading it on my phone, and I felt like, I don't know, the ripple effect of it. Mm-hmm. Because it is so very, no matter what you think you're doing, obviously you're lying or delusional or something. I did the whole Nightline debate thing, and this woman, Kim Benson, who wrote a book about how she's finally thin, at one point said to me, "You don't even know how much you eat," because I'm not obsessively counting calories every day. And what I didn't get to tell her because of the format is that, you know, I dieted for 20 years. You did the same thing. I don't know if there is a fat person with a history of dieting who is not painfully, exquisitely aware, even in the midst of their fat activism, of what they are putting in their body.
Absolutely.
And that just... That just floored me, the thought that because you don't, I don't know, keep intentional count, that you must not know. Because if you knew, you wouldn't be eating so much and you wouldn't be fat.
Well, I think it's almost the extension is that if you're not being hypercritical of everything that you eat, then therefore you must not have an accurate awareness of what you're eating. That it's not, it seems to be, that's sort of the unspoken, like, code to all of this, isn't necessarily so much just a vague awareness of what you're eating as people expect, because this is a part of our culture of food and eating, that people expect you to not only have an awareness, but to have a hypercritical, apologetic sort of mind fuck about it. That, you know, if you eat a cupcake and you don't feel like shit about it afterwards, then obviously the gravity of what you have done has not occurred to you.
There's it's not even unspoken. I think it's pretty clearly spoken, because you read all of this stuff about how Americans are so fucked up when it comes to the idea of portions and that sort of thing. So that even though you've been through, you know, whichever diet program you've been through for however many years, there's this instant knowledge that if on the part of observers, that if you knew just how much you were eating, truly knew. So I think it's not even unspoken. I think it's rigorously
overt.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Well, one thing that sort of fascinates me is that I think that there the split here is between people who have an extensive history of dieting and people who do not have an extensive history of dieting. I know he loves it when I do this. I'll use my husband as an example. My husband, like, prior to us living together, I don't think had ever read the nutritional facts on a package in his entire life. And if he did, he had absolutely no idea what any of the information on it was meant to impart to him. And I try these days really have to resist sort of obsessively going, I mean, I don't buy a whole lot of packaged foods. Not that it's totally okay if you do buy prepackaged foods. I'm not, you know, saying that's bad or judgy. But I personally buy mostly whole foods that, you know, like a bag of kale does
because
not.
Because you're a snob. With your kale.
But the kale doesn't come, like, with the nutritional facts stamped into it. And part of the reason, in all honesty, that I prefer buying whole, you know, sort of unprocessed foods is because that shit is not there. Because it does weird things to my head that I get obsessive about it. And what's hilarious is that because my husband had never had this background in dieting, you know, we had, you know, we'll go through these conversations where he wants to eat better and he wants to eat better food and he doesn't want to eat so much, you know, processed prepackaged stuff. And he wants, you know, we'll go through all of this and I will say, you know, like, we'll talk about nutrition and, you know, I'll be like, well, what's, you know, in those texturized soy protein fake chicken patties you like so much? And he'll say, I don't know. And I'll be like, go get the box. And he gets the box and he looks at it and he's like, I don't know what this means. And I'm like, and I can literally run it down for him that, like, I actually, because of my diet history, have memorized FDA requirements and recommendations for a normal sized human. And this is sick. This is like a sickness in my head that I don't like, and I wish that I could, you know, I wish that I didn't know all of this anymore, because it is, it really doesn't serve me. And but I think that that keen awareness, and I'm not saying that every fat person with a diet history is you know, responded the same way that I do, but I think, as you said, yeah, if you have this history, if you have any history at all of weight consciousness, of feeling like you want to lose weight, you've probably been through this mind change where we're no longer, basically we get broken and we're no longer capable of just eating, and we have to obsess about it. And I feel like that is sort of, I mean, I think that's really sad. That, you know, we've come to a point culturally where not only is that, you know, sort of expected, but like you get judged if you're not like that. Like if you dare to eat something without, and this particularly tends to happen in between women more than men. But I don't know about you, Marianne, but I've been in circumstances where I have seen women like get all judgy and shit on each other based on, you know, their knowledge about what's in the food that they're eating.
You mean like every day in a cafeteria setting? You mean like any time women on diets eat together?
Basically.
Essentially, yeah.
So yeah, so that's just, you know, like it is such an intense sort of part of how I think about. I mean, it's something that I've actually tried to, a habit I've tried to break myself of. And you know, I know we all have, you know, those of us who have had, you know, histories of dieting or eating disorders or food issues, you know, we all have different, you know, sort of, like, backgrounds and shit that it did to us, and some of us came out relatively unscathed, and some of us came out, you know, all kinds of fucked up, and we had to, you know, personally, I really had to sort of relearn how to eat like people, you know, who aren't obsessive about food eat, which for me doesn't mean devouring everything in sight, but it does, it means having, balancing a consciousness with how much of how much I have eaten with, you know, not being overconscious of how much I have eaten. Do you have anything to add to that, Marianne?
Well, I am trying to kind of think of the best way to express it, because I have written about this before, but what I have sort of come out of my, I guess, diet experience with, and what gets questioned a whole lot, and what particularly pisses me the fuck off about people, you know, going on about how much fatties eat, is that I have a really hard time, like, not resenting the necessity of eating. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest struggle even now, you know, when I haven't dieted for quite a number of years, is to have enough food and to not fall back into, I can't believe I have to go to the grocery store again. This is going to take so long. Then I have to prepare it. Then I have to eat it. Then I have to clean up from it. Sort of resentful thinking about it.
Just hating eating, basically.
Yeah, basically. And so when somebody comes on the blog or in person or Twitter or whatever, you know, and their automatic assumption is that I spend all day on the sofa eating dip with my fingers or something. First mental image that came to mind. You know, their mental image is that I'm there, I've got the thing of dip, and I'm just cramming it in my face with my fingers. I really, like, sometimes I have, like, a physical urge to do violence to them because it is so foreign to my experience of food. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so incredibly angry that, A, you know, they're calling me a liar. And B, now I have to, like, think about food even more. And C, that they have effectively, you know, negated my entire reality. You know, the reality is I get up and I have breakfast because intellectually I know that if I do not have breakfast, the entire rest of my day is going to be a struggle when it comes to making sure I eat. You know, if I start out with the breakfast, mm-hmm. then I can, my body will actually give me hunger cues and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But if I skip a couple of meals, I don't get those hunger cues. And then I get sick when I eat. And it's this whole big, like, horrible cycle of food is stupid. And so I spend a lot of time thinking about food, not in a sort of obsessive diet way, but in a, okay, you know, it's been 5 hours since I last had something to eat. I need to start preparing for my next meal so that by the time I realize I'm hungry, I will have some food. And all of this, you know, deliberate process that I have to put into it, and to have that sort of erased just because, you know, oh, fatties are sitting on the couch, they never stop eating. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, it enrages me beyond coherence.
Well,
it goes back to that reality thing that we actually were talking about. So
yeah,
topic for once.
Well, this, I mean, it ultimately comes down to the issue that there is no monolithic fat experience or set of habits that, you know, you cannot eat, no matter how much conventional wisdom would say all fat people do X, Y, and Z, I can find you easily without even trying that hard. I could find you a fat person who doesn't do those three things.
Yes.
And they're just, you know, the variety of experience, ironically, just like thin people, you know, fat people have all kinds of different habits. Yes, there are fat people who eat an enormous amount of food, and there are thin people who eat an enormous amount of food. And there are people in both groups who don't do that. And there are people in both groups who exercise, and there are people in both groups who don't. I mean, it goes on and on. That the idea that...
Leslie, it almost sounds like you're saying fatness is caused by many different things and can't be tied to just one behavior.
Why, Marianne, that is what I'm saying, actually. but I mean, this is...
That's a world gone mad.
But this is, I mean, and this is why we have to be able to, like, yell about it and laugh about it, because this is my real life, that I'm not, you know, sort of, fat is not a behavior. I'm not sort of this individual, you know, representative person that my habits are the same habits of that, you know, everyone that is shaped or looks like me, we all got this way because of doing the exact same thing, you know, and to hear people who basically just ignore that. And more to the point, even ignore, I mean, I've gotten comments on my blogs that are basically, you know, have you considered eating less and exercising?
Yes.
And it's like, do you read the blog before you post? Because if you read the blog, there might be some interesting background information there for you that, you know, might change how you're talking to me right now, because this is sort of betraying the reality that you know nothing about me because all you've read is this one post that you happen to have commented on. And that, again, is enraging to me because it, and this is very, you know, a fat activist issue from the get-go, it makes me feel invisible. It makes me feel like my experience and the life that I live is not real. It's not recognized. It's, you know, if people don't believe it, then, you know, it may as well not be real. And I, this is part of where I struggle between wanting to be like, but, these are my habits and they're not the habits you're describing. But also at the same time being like, but the people who have the habits you're describing, that's okay too. And they shouldn't be shit on because of it.
Yes.
So it's a balancing
act. I want to
act.
Like clap for you, you know, in a Tinkerbell sort of way.
You believe in fairies.
I believe in fatties.
It's true. And I mean, one of the most heinous examples of this sort of thing actually happened on my blog a while ago that I don't even think I really talked to anybody about it, but it really upset me. I had a guest post, and I'm not even going to say who it's from. that sort of mentioned having a past of having an eating disorder. And there was a comment to this person's post that seriously, in all fairness, went, oh, please. Yeah, right. And I was like, you know, I get shitty hate mail every once in a great while. And most of the time I just sort of shrug and laugh and, you know, whatever, loser. This, and I think part of it was because it wasn't me, it was someone that I consider a friend that they were attacking, seriously made me want to reach through the computer and punch them in the face like a bunch of times. Because the idea, and this again is something that is sort of a prevalent concept, that fat people cannot possibly ever have eating disorders. Because if they had eating disorders, then they wouldn't be fat anymore. And that makes me really, really stabby, because again, you know, why on earth would you say that to someone, even if you thought they were full of shit? Why would you doubt their, you know, veracity in disclosing something that personal and that important to you? I mean, that's just like, it's basically like just, you know, taking someone who you know has a sort of psychological issue and then just sort of taking a big sharp stick and poking at that issue and trying to fuck them up. Like, why would you do that?
Because obviously you're lying. You can't have an eating disorder. You're fat.
And yep. It's so outrageous to me that, you know, and there are actually, in fairness, a lot of people online who write about, who are both fat and who write about fat, and also who write about having had eating disorders or dealing with fat people who either currently or in the past have had eating disorders. And, you know, these are sort of important, you know, definitely important issues. It's not, eating disorders has never really been my sort of forte, but yeah, it just sort of, you know, it makes me really, really upset to hear, you know, and not only that, but like I said, it's the invisibility factor. It makes people, and not just me, but it makes people feel as though what they're experiencing, like you almost start to doubt your own knowledge about what your life is based on what a stranger is telling you.
Well, more than that, like, I feel like especially with doctors, there's that authority thing going. So not only do you doubt, you know, your experience, you start to think that maybe your experience is what is good for you. You know, like it's hard to talk about, you know. Because you wind, I feel like I sound like a crazy person, but I am a crazy person, so I guess that's okay. I've told the story a bunch of times, and I sent you a link to an article that Kate Daly just wrote recently about eating disorders at all sizes and the sort of disconnect that comes when you're a fat person doing these crazy extreme behaviors. And
awesome.
People are rewarding you for it and, you know, praising you because what's considered anorexic, you know, once you get below a BMI is just, you know, being a virtuous dieting fat person when you're a fat person. And I know that when I was sort of at my craziest when it came specifically to body stuff, you know, and I had what little medical input I had, it was positive. It was that, you know, yes, I felt like crap, but it would all be worth it because I was going to lose weight and I was healthier. And I didn't feel healthier. I felt like killing myself. And yet, you know, they were the ones in authority. So they were the ones that I believed. So.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that, and that's true of lots of medical interactions that I've heard a million stories from people who go to the doctor and explain that, you know, the doctor, particularly at a physical, will ask you a series of questions about your eating habits and your exercise habits and all that good stuff. And, you know, I've seen it told a million times from people who will explain, you know, oh, I'm a vegetarian and, you know, I really love riding my bike and I, you know, probably ride, you know, try to do like, you know, 10 miles a day, like 3 days a week. And basically the, like, you know, later that same visit or on a next visit, the doctor will sort of make a comment about, well, you should really start exercising. And it sort of becomes this assumption that even when you've told this story, that people aren't listening, or that maybe they listen for the first like couple of minutes that you're talking, but it goes in one ear and out the other.
It's like Charlie Brown's teacher.
And we're and we get right back to, you know, the assumptions based on, well, I'm seeing a fat person in front of me, therefore they must have these certain sets of behaviors which I have to instruct them are wrong, as opposed to actually asking, you know, what is your diet like? What is your exercise, you know, routine like? Do you have an exercise routine at all? I mean, even a question like that, do you exercise? You know, a lot of times won't even come up. It's more just, you know, sort of this assumption of, and I don't want to say that's universally, because there are, you know, there are doctors that listen and there are doctors that ask these questions. And, you know, I feel like, too, there becomes, when you're dealing with the medical field, you reach a point where medical professionals are just so sort of mystified by you that they don't know what to tell you anymore. That, you know, like, well, you know, if you're reporting that, you know, well, I eat a balanced diet and, you know, I exercise 5 to 6 days a week and I do aerobic and, you know, weight training and all the good stuff that I'm supposed to do and I'm still this size, like, it reaches a point where it's like, well, I can recommend surgery for weight loss, but, you know, if you're doing everything quote unquote right according to the expectations of the medical establishment, you are sort of a mystery, and it you do start to feel like sort of a freak, or like you must be the only one, or your life must be just completely unreal, that, you know, how is it possible that you can have these habits that we have deemed healthy and not have a body that reflects them, which I find even more hilarious, because, you know, that kind of thinking, as we've said a million times before, that kind of thinking also goes hand in hand with the idea that if, you know, somehow if fat bodies represent all of these unhealthy habits, then wouldn't it also, the logic extend that thin bodies represent people who have all these healthy habits? But we know that that's not true. We know that not everyone who is thin or average sized has these immaculate habits that we consider these earmarks of health. So if we can rationalize that, then why can't we rationalize the idea that fat people operate much in the same way?
Because, again, the only sort of, you know, quote unquote rational response is that, well, they're fat. Mm-hmm. Of course they don't operate the same way. It's this crazy magical thinking.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and this also goes along with, I think, the ideas of, you know, searching for a gene that makes people fat, like trying to unravel this mystery of, you know, it. And these days, it is, in fairness, it is hard to find an informed medical practitioner who won't acknowledge that, yeah, dieting is not a really successful process, that most people tend to fail at it. And whether or not they, yeah, well, yeah, because they don't have anything better, because they don't have anything better to offer. And, you know, I think that it continues to be sort of supported in desperation, because it's like, well, it's this or weight loss surgery. And, you know, a lot of people are not willing to have weight loss surgery, particularly people who are only, you know, 20, 30 pounds overweight, you know, according to the charts. So, you know, it does sort of, it's hard to find people in this field who are going to argue with that. And yet, as you said, you know, there's still this emphasis on, well, this is, you still have to diet and you still have to do these things, because this is the information that we have and it's what we're going to go with, as opposed to, you know, just trying to, and this is part of what I talked tried to talk about in my recent post about not being weighed at the doctor's office on my own blog. And just sort of, you know, let's look at other non-weight related signifiers of what it is to be healthy and use those as yardsticks, because the weight does not seem to be changing regardless of, you know, the habits that you're operating under.
Nobody wants to hear that, though, because I don't believe that weight bias is genuinely about health.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my own little pet theory is that it's really about a fear of death, which is why the initial tagline on my blog was, "Thin people die too." And I think that there is this sort of, I don't know, we have this incredibly youth-obsessed culture, you know, where younger and younger bodies are idealized and where sickness is increasingly stigmatized to the point where anything that does not fit this incredibly narrow image of, you know, what perfect white middle-class American health looks like, you know, is deadly and wrong and going to kill you. And
yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's partly a fear of death, but I also think that it's a fear of disability.
Yeah,
that, you know, I you know of a couple of, you know, sort of I'm not even gonna say names or anything because that's not fair, but I do know of a couple of people who in you know, who were sort of distant acquaintances who have had weight loss surgery in the past few years, not because they had any sort of immediate imposing health problems, but because of a fear that I might have a disability or a health problem related to my fat in the future at some unknown date. And that is really, obviously, that's problematic to me on a bunch of different levels, because it is so ableist and troubling in that in just a basic level. But it's also, you know, I think that sort of speaks to, you know, definitely there's a fear of death in there that's just part of being human. But I think because we have pathologized fat bodies so dramatically, and we have this cultural concept of the fat body as being constantly in pain or constantly uncomfortable. All of the rhetoric we hear, like whenever somebody on some thin ass person puts on a fat suit and walks around all day, all they talk about, oh my God, it's so heavy and it's so uncomfortable and it's so hot. Well, it's all of these things because you're wearing a big costume, not because that's actually what walking around as a fat person is like.
Actually had some fat people say that's what walking around like a fat person is like, though. And I have to question their, like, fitness levels. and also, you know, whether or not they've never known a thin person who was constantly warm or constantly cold.
This is true, yeah.
You know, so these things do happen. And sometimes they happen in conjunction with fat bodies. But that does not... It's correlation. It's not
the universal. I mean, our culturally, the ideology is and has always been, at least, you know, for many decades now, that walking around as a fat person is always 100% of the time necessarily an uncomfortable experience, or having any kind of physical activity from, you know, scooping a cat box to having sex must be awkward and uncomfortable and you know, cause you to be winded at the end of it. So, you know, when we have this overwhelming sort of cultural sense of what that's like, then, you know, that really colors our ability to look at a fat body as something that, well, you know, I'm not disabled now, but someday I might be because this culture has gotten into my head.
And well, it didn't have this sort of cultural mythos about how horrible it is to be fat. People might be okay with being fat, and we can't have that.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the inbred fat phobia. That's part of what we use as a culture. We use to scare people away from contentment or away from, you know, even just being, you know, 10 to 15 pounds overweight. that, you know, we all see studies every day that come out that, you know, you're 1 pound overweight, that means you're 100% more likely to die someday in the future. Which is actually true of everyone, but getting aside.
I saw the best horrible article. I guess it was last night. And one of the lines in it was that, and even worse, some studies have shown that those in the overweight category might be better off than those in the, you know, the okay category in these certain categories. And I was like, and even worse.
Yeah.
Some studies have shown this.
It sucks when people are healthy, Marianne. It totally sucks.
So terrible. There's scientific proof that our obsession with thin, thin bodies might not be actually healthy.
Yeah.
Such a bad attitude today. I apologize.
It's okay. I like your bad attitudes. There, I like it when you're sort of cranky and snarky. It's funny. It's sort of like gratifying, I guess. But seriously,
I try so hard to be nice, and I always get in trouble when I get a little snarky. Like, inevitably I will be scolded.
Well, this is particularly a subject that it's hard to not be angry about, because this is a subject that is basically, we're talking about people denying, basically calling us liars and denying the reality of how we live our lives. And that is, it's hard to just be sort of jolly and laughing about that. It's hard to find humor in someone discrediting you and refusing to trust you to be honest about yourself and refusing to trust that you know your body. That's just, you know, it's fucked up to have that feeling. And it's infantilizing, among other things, which is problematic on its own merits. But, you know, I mean, that's just, it really, really makes me angry. And it's one of few subjects that I can't find a whole lot of humor in, that I really do just sort of go from zero to rage with no hesitation. Pretty much.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, I think we pretty much covered.
This is like the shortest episode we've ever done.
Well, it's like 30 something minutes. So it's
the shortest episode we've ever done.
Is there anything you would like to add, Miss Marianne, to as a time filler?
I don't want to just, you know, randomly take up people's time. I just think it's amazing that we were so succinct.
Well, I think we're getting good at this.
I think also it's the kind of topic where we're just like, there is no room on this one. Like, yeah. There's no wiggle room for definition. There's no gray area for, you know, well, what is fat? And blah, blah, blah. You know, there's no reassurances to offer. There is only, this is fucked up. And there, I don't like it when it happens to me.
There was actually an article, an op-ed article, and I'll look it up and link it, because I totally forget exactly where it was. But it was basically a piece talking about the fact that, and the title was something like, you know, obese people can't see their plus size selves or
I've
whatever.
I read that. I couldn't get past the first couple of paragraphs. A friend of mine linked me to it. And I was like, why did I even follow this link? I knew it was going to be awful. And it was awful.
Basically, I mean, we'll link the article so y'all can read it. But basically, yeah, it was sort of making the case that, like, the author was using personal experience, which, you know, is valid, to talk about, like, oh, you know, I would hang out with my skinny friends, and I wasn't constantly thinking about the fact that I'm a great big fat whale. And then I'd see, like, pictures, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm a great big fat whale. Why didn't anybody tell me?
The cruelly revealing photos.
Yes. And it's sort of, I mean, this is another example of what we're talking about, where it's like, you know, your experience and the reality that you were living in that moment of hanging out with her friends was that, hey, I'm an equal person who shouldn't feel like shit about herself, and I feel pretty good and happy hanging out with my friends. And only in this culture would you later see a picture and think, how dare I be happy and contented with my life at that moment? Look at me. Only in this fat-hating culture would you find that. And that just sort of blew my fucking mind. And I've seen this, and I've heard this lots and lots of times over the years, because it seems to be a really common experience for predicating weight loss on a lot of people's parts. Actually, I think there was a memoir that came out not that long ago that had a similar sort of theme, where it was a woman who lost a bunch of weight after she saw a picture of herself and was like, oh my God, I'm gigantic and fat and disgusting. And, you know, this is where the concept of questioning your own reality and the cultural impositions that we are trained to place on fat bodies sort of intersect, because you can walk around and feel okay and feel healthy and your knees don't hurt and you're breathing all right and you're going out and you're having a good time with your friends and you feel good. And that ceases to be real to you when you see a picture of yourself and you realize, who's that fat woman in that picture? Oh shit, that's me. I couldn't possibly have been feeling good and having a good time if I'm that fat woman in that picture, because fat women don't do that. Thus, you know, it causes you to sort of question, okay, well, could I really have been having a good time then? Could I really have felt okay about myself during, you know, the period that I was out doing whatever the fuck it was when they took my picture? And I feel like there are a lot of people, particularly women, who think, oh, well, no, basically that gets all of those happy memories get shuttled to the side because they realize that, oh, God, who knew that I looked like that? And that is so depressing to me.
It's body dysmorphia in action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that same article, one of the women talked about how, you know, she, before she saw the cruelly revealing photos, how she felt was, you know, she was as confident as any thin person. Mm-hmm. And somehow that's bad.
Of course it's bad. She's fat.
You know what it is? It's that I've been doing this with Julia all day. Like, we also instant message and we'll be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. It's because you're fat. And it cracks us up.
But go ahead. Sorry, finish, and then I have a comment.
I apologize.
Well, that was something else that there was in the comment that I was talking about at the beginning of this episode, where the you know, eat too much, echo comment. One of the things that person also said was that, you know, you could be doing so much better if you didn't spend so much time, like, talking about fat stuff. And, like, basically, you know, you're more than just a fat body. And it's like, well, fuck me, man. I'm quite aware that I'm more than just a fat body. Like, that's not news to me. That's not news to Marianne. That's not news to most of us. The reality, though, is this is what it is to be an activist, is that sometimes, yeah, we have to spend a lot of time harping on and on and fucking on a subject because people aren't listening. And the only way that you get people to listen often is by harping on and becoming a pain in the ass about it. And that's why, you know, when I see articles like the one we're referencing, I seriously, it makes me want to, like, stand up and scream into the internet as loud as possible, it's okay to feel good about yourself when you're fat. You don't have to hate yourself for being fat. It's okay. Everything is gonna be okay.
What I love, and by love I mean loathe, is that there are people who actively disagree with that stance. There are people who think fat acceptance is dangerous. Because if fat people accept themselves, well, then they'll just go on being fat.
Cats and dogs living together.
Living together.
Mass hysteria.
Oh. Yeah,
I'm going to have to link that on YouTube, too.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Sorry, I totally interrupted you.
But that's exactly, I mean, that may as well be what they are actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stuff coming out of their mouths doesn't make any sense. All this dangerous, dangerous self-acceptance. Oh my God, it's so dangerous that you don't want to kill yourself.
Well, and this is also where we get to the issue that you mentioned earlier about questioning whether this is related to health or whether it's related to appearance. And I think that ultimately it comes down to, yeah, it's related to, you know, it's not related to health, because if you really cared about people's health primarily, you wouldn't, you know, people in the general global sense would not be so dead set on the idea that fat people have to be miserable all the time. We can't let them, we cannot allow them to not be miserable, because that's dangerous. That threatens the stability of the universe to allow fat people to not be miserable for a minute or two. And
the best, most random mental image of like a fat silver surfer surfing through the universe.
We need to get somebody to draw that. But seriously, I mean, that's if the real investment and the real interest was about people's health, then you wouldn't want them to be miserable, because being miserable and stressed out all the time is universally recognized as being incredibly detrimental to your health. So it's as you said, it's much more than that. It's in any, you know, talk about, you know, well, I just want you to be healthy is always a red herring.
You know what else being stressed out causes?
Fatness.
Weight gain. It really does. Like, some people lose weight when they're stressed out, but other people, regardless of what they eat, gain weight.
Well, there's actually what is it called? There's a certain stuff in the body. I think it's called cortisol that is, I think it's, I'm going to sound like the dumbest ass ever on this part. But, you know, this is me trying to be all medical and shit. This is why I don't talk about the medical health shit, people. But yeah, there's this substance that's produced by your body that is called cortisol. This is mentioned on a horrible weight loss commercial, but I actually talked to my doctor about this recently, so I know that it is a real substance.
I am playing the weight loss commercial in my head right now. I've seen it so many times. Like,
it's the belly fat commercial. It's the belly fat. The belly gets fatter.
I see the graphic of the animated cortisol going to the outline of the belly.
Apparently, cortisol is actually a real thing, and it can have this effect that your body produces more cortisol the more you are stressed out, and that can cause not just weight gain, it can cause also things like increased elevated blood pressure, stuff like that. So, you know, and this all goes back to the idea that, yeah, there are extreme health consequences to being stressed out and miserable all the time. It's scientifically proven, people.
I love it that the diet commercial is its own best argument against dieting.
I'm going to see if I can find the belly fat commercial on YouTube as well.
Somebody has to have put it up there. It's, oh my God. Yeah. You know what we haven't addressed and what I do want to address, because, like, we can talk about problems, but I also want to offer solutions, is how to come back from something like this. I mean, when everyone is constantly questioning your reality and you're sitting there feeling like a crazy person, what do you do when the entire world is trying to gaslight you?
What do you do, Marianne?
Well,
you go first.
Well, I started taking pottery.
You're making little coconuts to drink out of.
I am.
And let's not forget alcohol. Alcohol is good for coping.
I was going to say the drinking is part of the stress.
We're kidding. Alcohol is not good for coping. Alcohol is good in moderation.
As the adult child of alcoholics.
Yeah,
it is not a good coping mechanism. Don't do it.
No, it's bad.
And Sometimes people go to therapy. Sometimes I have found one of the most important things for me is to belong to a community of people with similar dangerous, radical beliefs so that when I have this experience, I know that I am not alone in having this experience and that I am part of a community that A, acknowledges that, you know, I'm not the only one who has ever, you know, had the sort of, oh, you must be lying experience, and that there are other people who think that's not right. You know, community is there to build you up when you're having a bad day, you know, so that there is someone you can call without being afraid, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
of calling your BFF and having them go, well, you know, if you just ate less.
Yeah.
And then everything explodes.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I think that if you have access to one, even if it's only on the internet, I think that having a community of supportive friends, they don't even necessarily have to be fat, but people who are supportive of you and who know you is very, very important and can be really useful for that. One thing that I'm actually thinking of, it's sort of a random thing that popped into my head, and Inga, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Muschio, I forget how you pronounce it, but she wrote a book called Cunt. And
yes, she
apologies
did.
For people who are listening to this at work and are like,
oh my God.
But she wrote this book, and the book is problematic in a lot of ways now. It was really like a big deal for me when I first read it as an undergrad, and I got to carry around this book with this naughty word on the cover.
And it's like, it's yellow with a flower on.
Yes, exactly.
It's all innocuous and like, hello, I'm pretty. And then it's block script across the top.
Yeah. One of the things that has stuck with me from that book that is not essentialist and problematic is the author spent a period of her life where she decided she was only going to expose herself to art made by women. And now, again, I'm not going to get all essentialist about this because that's its own podcast. Hell, that's its own, like, book. But basically, the thing that I took away from this is she talked about the way that only exposing herself to art made by this underrepresented group of people was incredibly enlightening. And it changed the way that she saw the world and the way that she saw other stuff in the mainstream that, you know, wasn't, you know, later on when she stopped sort of shutting it down and only looking at stuff that she knew was produced by women. Now, I sort of went through a similar shift around the time that I was first discovering fat activism, where I would really work hard to try to limit my exposure to fat-hating media and to, on top of that, also extra expose myself, not in that way, to media either made by or featuring fat people. And, like, for example, one of the first things I bought in this project was a book called Women and Large, which is a collection, a fairly well-known, I think it's still in print, collection of fat nudes. Which
They're
is
so
a,
good.
It's a beautiful, amazing, stunning book. And if it is in print, you should absolutely go and get yourself a copy because it will change how you see human bodies and where you see beauty. Absolutely. And
it's
I read
in
this
print and available for sale. Thank you, internet.
Awesome. So we will link to that too.
I just sent you the link.
Awesome. Thank you. And so that was sort of started me on that road. And I know that there are people out there who don't have, for one reason or another, don't have access to a reliable community of like-minded fatties or even like-minded non-fatties that they can turn to. And sometimes one of the things that you can do in those circumstances is just have something that you know is good for your brain that is sort of massaging to your self-esteem. It can be a book like Women and Large. It can be a book that is just a novel that has a positive fat character in it. It can
kind of hard to find.
I know they are, but you know, if it makes you feel good about yourself, it's something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, or watching Mama Cass videos on fucking YouTube, you know, something that makes you sort of reconnect with what you know about yourself and what you know about, you know, fatness, and that it's not this horrible plague. And that can be really, really helpful. And it's helpful to me a lot of times because if I've been exposed to something that has upset me, I'm very much an introvert, and my response is not always to turn to a community of people to lean on. It's actually pretty rare that I do that. Usually my response is to withdraw sort of internally and try to process it on my own, and then later I'll have that conversation. So for me, having, you know, art and having resources and books and websites and photography and paintings and music and stuff that it seems that comes from a positive place, having that at the ready is an enormous coping device for me that allows me to sort of recenter myself and be like, you know, okay, I watched a bunch of gossip videos, and now I, instead of feeling down on myself, I feel like I could go out and kick this person's ass. Because if you watch a bunch of gossip videos, you will probably come away from the experience feeling like that.
That's I also, I look at the Fashionista Flickr pool.
Yes.
I mean, we could spend a whole hour, and maybe we should, talking about the power of, like, normalizing fat bodies through visual memes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that I find really powerful. Like, when I have hung out with, you know, a lot of very thin hip people for long enough that I start to feel kind of weird, it's very powerful to go to this place where not all of the bodies are like mine, but bodies like mine are represented, and there's this whole range. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just I'm the fattest person in the room and everyone else is half my size, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this whole range of bodies. And that's a really, like, recentering thing.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right.
There is as I don't know, stupid and new age and hippie as it is sometimes. Sometimes I also sort of retreat into self-care.
Yes.
You know, and whether that's something small like doing my nails or plucking my eyebrows or spending 3 hours in the bathtub with a romance novel, I mean, sometimes you just have to step back. And I mean, I'm like textbook classic extrovert. Surprise, surprise. And even I find it valuable to sort of step back and recenter myself in my own body and be like, you know, this is mine and this is me and these are the things I do to take care of myself. And some fat hating idiot on the street can't change that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All so right. There. I've been fatties.
I think that we have thoroughly covered this subject now, and I think that we should wrap up.
I think that's a good idea.
Do you have any additional thoughts? Do you want the people to clap their hands?
I always want the people to clap their hands.
Clap your hands if you believe in fatties, everyone.
I feel like it should be followed by a healthy ass shake as well. But I don't know if that's asking too much. I feel like that would be the appropriate response.
Well, people can clap or shake their asses or both at the same time or independently. You have been listening to FatCast Episode 7, and I am Leslie Kinzel.
I'm Marianne Kirby.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you guys next week. You have been listening to FatCast Episode 7. The music you've heard in this podcast is by Wasaru. FatCast is shared with you under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike License.